Oh, thanks so much for being with us here on this Monday. It's Vinny and Clay here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the Morning Tailgate. Send your thoughts in to 702-365-9200. That's our text line and phone number. It's brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center here on Raider Nation Radio. A lot to get into today, and let's start it up. Tim Murray is here with us. He's the great host of Primetime, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN, VSiN Live. He's also the well-renowned and preeminent college football betting podcast host up at VSiN. You can get this podcast up at Apple as well. I listened to it all weekend, and it was awesome to get back into it because I can't get enough of your college football analysis, Tim, and I appreciate you coming on today. What was some of the biggest takeaways that you had from that podcast that was just released a few days ago? Because I thought the projected top four was something that really gained a lot of interest, because everyone wants to know, you know, who's going to reign on top, especially for projections, because it is so hit and miss when you think about what the playoff could bring this year.
The situation that we have brewing with the college football playoff, right, where, you know, you have to be a conference champion in order to earn that bye. And the reason that's so interesting and what I discussed in the podcast that you're alluding to is now that Texas is in the SEC and Oregon's in the Big Ten, you're looking at the four believed to be best teams based off of the betting odds, based off of most people's power ratings of Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, and Texas in some order, and only two of those teams at max are going to get a bye. So it's really going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out. And, you know, we had college football handicapper Paul Stone on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and I thought his mindset was an interesting one, which was, and I'm not sure, I haven't checked the odds this morning, but he took a flyer at the Westgate Superbook on Utah to win the national championship at 100-1. And he didn't think that Utah really had a legitimate shot to win it. But his point was, and I think it's a fair one, the winner of the Big 12 is going to get a bye, and they're going to advance automatically to the quarterfinals. Now, they'll more than likely be an underdog, whoever wins that conference, because it's kind of a jumbled mess there in the Big 12. Yeah. But, you know, the way it's going to play out is that, like I just mentioned, you know, two of those four teams, whether it be Oregon or Texas, let's just say it plays out the way that we expect it to be, they'll be playing that opening weekend on, you know, December 21st or December 20th, and then the winner of the ACC, whether that be Florida State, Clemson, Miami, whoever it may be, and the winner of the Big 12 will be sitting at home. So, you know, I think it opens up a whole new dynamic to how to bet college football this year from a futures perspective, and I think, you know, it's something that a lot of people aren't really thinking about just yet, that when you look at these early top rankings, recognizing that only two at most of those teams are going to earn a bye.
Tim, thinking about my Notre Dame Fighting Irish and Marcus Freeman and the work that he's quietly done building a tremendous roster. They've been knocking it out of the park in terms of recruiting. They've added a transfer portal quarterback from Duke University. Where do you feel like they fit in the mix? I think they're a playoff team this year. I'd be surprised if they don't. But with Riley Leonard now in place at quarterback and everything else that they have going for them, where do you see them figuring into this playoff mix?
Yeah, well, first off, I didn't know you're a Notre Dame guy, so you know, we're one in the same. Let's hug it out over the airwaves.
Absolutely.
Here. I'm looking back at my panoramic picture of Notre Dame Stadium right behind me
there
here in my office. But
heaven.
Look, let's start with this. You mentioned the playoff. If Notre Dame does not make the playoff this year, it should be a disappointment. It will be a disappointment. And there's plenty of teams that fall into that camp. And I know there's probably a collective eye roll in every car right now. Oh, here we go. Notre Dame, overrated, all this. But I'll be honest, this team, this roster, you alluded to it, it is as well constructed of a roster for Notre Dame as we've seen in years. Do I think they can win the national championship? Personally, no.
Right.
I don't think they can. But could they make a run to the semifinals? I think it's certainly possible when you think about how it all plays out. So let's jump into the roster. Actually, let's jump into the coaching staff, because I think this is important to start with. So you mentioned Marcus Freeman entering year three. Year three, historically, has been good for good Notre Dame coaches.
It has.
Brian Kelly went to the national championship in year three. Lou Holtz won the national championship in year three. So this is a big year for Marcus Freeman. The administration has gone all in on Marcus Freeman. They are spending spending at a very, very high level, which is a good thing.
Yep.
They should be spending at that level. If you want to be an elite football program, if you want to say you're going to win national championships, which they haven't done since 1988, you have to spend at that level. So what'd they do? They lost their offensive coordinator. Remember, 2 years ago, people may forget this, it was a very clunky, I would say borderline disastrous search for an offensive coordinator that ultimately landed with Jared Parker getting promoted from within. He left to go to Troy, which was a blessing in disguise, because
yes,
now Notre Dame went down and poached Mike Denbrock, who was the offensive coordinator at LSU. Who was their quarterback last year? Jaden Daniels. What did he do? He won the Heisman Trophy.
Yep.
Now, will Riley Leonard win the Heisman Trophy? I doubt it, but I think the system that they're building there. Okay, what'd they do in the transfer portal? A year ago, I thought they did a poor job of addressing the wide receiver room.
Mm-hmm.
They went out and attacked the wide receiver room. They brought in Bo Collins from Clemson, Chris Mitchell from Florida International, who had over 1,100 receiving yards a year ago. And then they got this speedster who was an All-American kick returner, Jaden Harrison, out of Marshall, in addition to the fact that they've got some nice pieces returning there. So they've got skill position players. The defense, you bring back Howard Cross up front, who was a borderline All-American. You bring back Riley Mills. You have a ton of depth, a ton of old. I think they have at least six or seven projected graduate students starting on the defense, which is massive. You know, when you have a veteran team, the quarterback position, you mentioned it. Riley Leonard comes in from Duke, highly touted guy. Injuries are a concern, but I think for Notre Dame, you have Steve Angeli as his backup, who started the Sun Bowl. People are very high on him, so there's not a massive drop-off if Riley Leonard runs into injuries. And then lastly, the schedule. The schedule is as easy as I have seen Notre Dame have in many, many years, where you open up at Texas A&M. That's a challenging game right now, depending on what sports book you look at. They're either a pick or a one-point underdog. Okay, after that, they have two MAC teams with Purdue sandwiched in there. Purdue's scheduled to be one of the worst teams in the Big Ten. They host Louisville. Remember last year, they lost to Louisville in a very poor showing there on the road. They get Florida State in early November off a bye, and then they get USC. I mean, there are four games that you would deem toss-ups, and that's it. They're going to be heavily favored in the other eight games. So the schedule shapes up very well for the Irish. Win totals around 10 or 10.5, depending on what sports book you look at. So, look, after this long pre-ramble, they should be a playoff team. Minus 165 is the price at some sports books for them to make the playoff. I think that's a little rich. But at the end of the day, I think if Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman don't make the playoff, it should be and will be deemed a disappointing season.
Correct.
It's the voice of Tim Murray, the host of Primetime 6 to 9 Eastern on VSiN. He's also the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast up on Apple or wherever you get podcasts. Make sure you subscribe and listen to Tim because he's done the homework already. And this is a perfect time for you to catch up on college football and the crazy landscape that is. In fact, I'm glad you brought up Notre Dame's first opponent, Texas A&M. I love what you were saying about Mike Elko in his first year with the Aggies. Could they be a surprise team out of the SEC?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you think about how Jimbo Fisher was recruiting down there. Mm-hmm. He was recruiting at an elite level, just was unable to put it all together outside of one season, the COVID season, where I believe they won the Orange Bowl and beat North Carolina. But they've had talent. There's no doubt about it. They have the resources, and I'm a big Mike Elko fan.
Okay.
I think he's a terrific coach. He was the defensive coordinator way back when at Wake Forest, went to Notre Dame in 2017, helped turn things around for the Irish after they had a 4-8 season, left after 1 year, went to Texas A&M to be the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And now, after 2 years at Duke, where he took Duke to pretty high levels. Remember, they opened up last year with an upset win over Clemson on national television. Riley Leonard gets hurt against Notre Dame, and it kind of derails their season a little bit there. But he comes in, he brings in Colin Klein to be his offensive coordinator, the former Kansas State quarterback who has been the offensive coordinator there for the Purple Cats for a number of years. Very innovative, highly thought after young coach. So, Connor Wegman, it kind of comes down to the quarterback, right? Okay. He's been there for a long time. A lot of differing opinions on Connor Wegman, but, I think this is a team that, we talked about it on the podcast. I even talked about it on VSiN Primetime with Jonathan Von Tobel, which was, you know, this team in around plus 220 to make the playoff is an interesting one because you're in the SEC, so you're going to get the benefit of the doubt if you go 9-3 or something like that. If they open up the season with a win over Notre Dame, which once again, based off of the odds, isn't crazy. They're a favorite in some spots. If they beat Notre Dame out of the chute, they're in a really great spot to potentially crash the playoff because Notre Dame is expected to be a top 10 team. So this is a team that has a ton of talent on the defensive line. And, you know, bringing it back to that week one game at Kyle Field under the lights there in College Station, Notre Dame's biggest weakness, as crazy as it sounds, is their offensive line. Wow. They lost their left tackle in Joe Alt, who's now with the Los Angeles Chargers. Their right tackle in Blake Fisher was a second round pick. So Texas A&M's strength, I believe, is their defensive line, especially coming off of the edge. Mike Elko certainly knows Riley Leonard as well as anybody. He was his quarterback the last couple of years. So that game week one has such a fascinating game. It's so important for both of those schools. Certainly more pressure on Notre Dame to win that game and to get the season off on the right foot. But if A&M, it's not an upset. They just win the game, right? Because they aren't an underdog. Right. If they win that game, yeah, watch out. I think the Aggies could certainly crash the playoff.
Got so many questions for you, but I want to switch gears real quick to recruiting, and specifically in my old neck of the woods, Los Angeles. USC lost 2 5-star recruits back-to-back over the weekend, basically, or late last week. And my question to you is this. You know, obviously that always hurts when you lose pledges from 5-star recruits. But you know, reading between the lines, but when you start analyzing this, both players were from Georgia. Do you think USC is doing a little bit of making a mistake, trying to go all the way across country to Georgia, right in the hotbed of the SEC, and Georgia is always going to be, casting a wide shadow over there, and trying to pull guys from that part of the country rather than just staying home in your vicinity. And not to limit your recruiting to just that particular area, but not taking chances on guys like that. It just looks bad for USC, and I'm wondering how much of it is the fact that these kids are both from Georgia, and that's a tall task sometimes getting kids out of that part of the country to come all the way west.
Yeah, and I don't know if I think he's still pledged to USC, but their top pledge right now is also a Georgia kid,
right?
Quarterback Julian Lewis, there out of Georgia. So, to answer your question from just a simple standpoint, yeah, I think, you know, the goal is ultimately to try to put up that, you know, fence around California or LA as much as you possibly can. You know, people are certainly coming in there and trying to take away as much talent as possible. But yeah, I think, you know, if you're Lincoln Riley, you want to, you know, I think like he was out of the chute there, try to keep as much homegrown talent as possible. But, the name of the game is now, you know, it is becoming this global game. I mean, Caleb Williams came to Oklahoma from the D.C. area, mm-hmm. followed him to Los Angeles. So, yeah, I think, you know, for Lincoln Riley, I'm fascinated to see how the next couple of years go because, I mean, you look at the schedule, right? They start here in Las Vegas. They're taking on LSU. That's essentially going to be a 70%, if not more, LSU crowd. I mean, those fans are crazy. They're going to take over this city Labor Day weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch that game here at Allegiant Stadium. But, you know, for USC, you look at, you have LSU, you have Notre Dame on the schedule in the non-con, and then you've got to play in the Big Ten, and you got to change things up a little bit. And, you know, to be honest, USC's mantra, or I would say, you know, the way people have looked at them over the last couple of years is that they're not that tough of a team. So I'm fascinated to see how they ultimately will, be in the Big Ten, which is thought to be kind of a hard-nosed type of conference. But, yeah, from a recruiting standpoint, you know, Lincoln Riley, I think, is trying to figure it out. Do I go heavy in high school recruiting? Do I spend more time in the portal? They've done a little bit of both. Year one, they were very portal heavy. Obviously, you know, getting a guy like Caleb Williams to follow him from Oklahoma was massive, and he ultimately won the Heisman Trophy that year. But yeah, I'm very curious to see USC long term, you know, what the mindset is there for Lincoln Riley and what this year is going to look like. I mean, guys, it's kind of crazy to think of it, but USC's win total is like 7.5. I mean, that's pretty low for the Trojans. Trojans, but when you look at the schedule, week three, you have to travel to Ann Arbor. You followed it up with a home game against Wisconsin. You have Penn State. They do avoid Ohio State, which is, and Oregon, which I think is beneficial to them because those are the two perceived best teams in this conference. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, you know, this year. A home game against Nebraska late in the season, I think, will be fascinating to see. So, yeah, it's I don't want to say it's a make or break season for Lincoln Riley, but it's an important one for him, I believe, just to see where this, you know, where they are as a you know, stable, you know, program when you think about the expectations that were out there just a year ago and how disappointing that season ultimately was for them, to lose five games and, you know, lose four conference games. And, you know, they didn't go out to the portal and get a quarterback. You know, they're going to stick with Miller Moss, even though they have, you know, the UNLV kid, Maiva, did come over and he'll be the backup. So, you know, also just from a Heisman standpoint, it's interesting to note that most books have Miller, Moss, and Maiva as the same, around like 40 to 50 to 1, because I think in their eyes, they believe that it might be a toss-up in that quarterback competition, even though word out of L.A. that is Miller Moss's job to lose.
Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating, especially when you start taking a look at what those odds might be. And sometimes that could be very telling. And we're speaking with Tim Murray, VSiN's college football betting podcast host, as well as host of Primetime Monday through Friday on VSiN. When you think about what could the projections for the top quarterbacks be by the end of the season and going into the draft, who are some of the names that you feel that are those that are NFL ready?
Yeah, I think it starts with Shador Sanders, Deion Sanders' son. Okay. Obviously, Shador and, you know, the Sanders family, some of it deserves, some of it not, gets a lot of eyeballs and maybe a lot of flack. But the fact of the matter is Shador, regardless of how many wins they'll have this year, he is a legitimate, you know, NFL quarterback. He is going to be more than likely a first round pick. He's got a big time arm. Hopefully they can keep him healthy and keep him upright. That was the biggest question last year, was that. Then you think about Carson Beck out of Georgia is a guy that probably will get a lot of, you know, hype around the NFL draft. When you think about, you know, some of the odds that have been out there for the NFL draft and the first overall pick. Other names, I think, you know, from a quarterback standpoint, from an NFL mindset, I think I don't think Jackson Dart out of Ole Miss is going to be a massive, you know, prospect necessarily, but I think he could have a really good year. We mentioned Riley Leonard as a guy that, you know, a couple years ago, some people believe that, you know, he could be a first round pick. So it's kind of fascinating when you think about some of the other names. I mean, Quinn Ewers at Texas is certainly going to have a lot of eyeballs on him. I don't know if he's a number one pick type of player, but he's going to put up big numbers, and that's, you know, Cam Ward, the Washington State transfer. He's going to be down at Miami. So, you know, when you look at betting odds, it's fascinating because a year ago, Caleb Williams was already, you know, minus 300, minus 400 to be the first overall pick, which ultimately he went number one. This year, it's a coin toss. Your top two odds are Carson Beck from Georgia, Shador Sanders out of Colorado. Quinn Ewers is in that 15 to 1 range. You know, Connor Wegman's a guy that might be mentioned a little bit too. So, you know, I think from a quarterback standpoint, it's going to be pretty fascinating. And who are going to be those quarterback hungry teams? Certainly the Raiders could potentially be one of those teams that could be looking for a quarterback. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out. Who emerges as a big time quarterback? Because honestly, guys, we weren't talking about Jaden Daniels being a second overall pick this time last year. And he had the breakout season, won the Heisman Trophy, was phenomenal for LSU, and ultimately, you know, is the second overall pick for the Washington Commanders.
Tim, I'm looking at a guy, Dylan Gabriel, who's now at Oregon by way of University of Central Florida and Oklahoma. And I know, I get that he's not the biggest guy. I think he's listed as 6 foot. But the production is certainly there. This is a kid that's played a lot of football. And done, you know, from a production standpoint, some pretty special things. 125 touchdowns compared to just 26 interceptions. Where does he fall on your watch list for quarterbacks this year?
Well, I think just from a production standpoint, to your point, I think, you know, if you're talking Heisman Trophy, absolutely, he's going to be in the discussion. You know, as for a pro prospect, I don't necessarily think he's going to be a, you know, a first round pick or anything like that. But I think the system fit for him, you know, going up to Eugene, as you alluded to, started his career at UCF, went to Oklahoma. Things were all right there. I love the fit for him, you know, going to Eugene, playing quarterback for Oregon. And I think when he, you know, goes into that system with Will Stein, the former UTSA offensive coordinator, I think it's a really good fit. You know, you think about the quarterback that he had for many years, Frank Harris, down there at UTSA. But, you know, that's the day and age we're in right now with college football. You're talking about a quarterback who's entering his sixth season in Dylan Gabriel, you know, Cam Rising doing the same thing. I believe it's his seventh season as he heads into it at Utah, missed all of last year due to injury. But I absolutely love Dylan Gabriel and this Oregon team. I mean, Oregon, I think, you know, we had on, college football handicapper Brad Powers a couple weeks ago on the podcast, and he said that, you know, based off of his power ratings, you know, he has them, Oregon, kind of closer to Ohio State and Georgia than maybe Texas. He has them a little bit more separated, and he believed, you know, in that minus $2 range that they're a good look to make the college football playoff. So I love the fit for Dylan Gabriel, all the weapons that they have up there in Oregon. And I think, you know, what we've seen so far in just a short sample size from Dan Lanning coming from Georgia as, you know, the D coordinator there, he's been phenomenal. He, you know, Alabama came hard after him. He didn't leave. Seems like he's kind of setting things up there. They have a great NIL situation up there in Eugene, great facilities. They're going hard in the portal. You know, this is a program as healthy as any in the country. And, you know, last year we saw them, you know, fall twice to Washington, Michael Penix in Washington, including here at Allegiant Stadium in that Pac-12 championship game. But this team's just gotten better and better. And I do think Dylan Gabriel, you know, I don't mean this to be crazy because Bo Nix ultimately went 12th overall, right or wrong. He went 12th overall to the Denver Broncos. I think Oregon upgraded at quarterback, to be honest, bringing in Dylan Gabriel to run that offense.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, I tell you what, Notre Dame, if you have Brad Powers on the show, Notre Dame should be sending pairs of golden headphones to you both there. Because, I mean, Brad Powers is still crying about the 1991 Orange Bowl game against Colorado.
No clip. There was no clip.
You got to let it go.
Yeah, talk to Pritch about that
stole. One. Yeah, exactly.
I always...
That got stolen from us.
Every time I see Pritch, man, he was like, it was a clip. I'm like, well, you shouldn't have punted to Rocket anyways. You should have just lost regardless for being that dumb and punting to Rocket Ishmael. 93 still sticks in my craw more.
Oh, really?
Losing to Boston College after they beat Florida State. That was a national championship that should have been theirs.
Then rolled Florida. Yeah, we should have been in that game. They shouldn't have elevated Florida State over us right there after we beat them.
But here's the sad part, once again. It's 2024, and we're griping about things that happened 30 years ago.
Exactly.
That tells you the state of the program. So hopefully, you know, we can complain more. I mean, you know, honestly, last year, a game that I was in attendance at, you know, the 10 men on the field, the dropped interception.
Oh, yeah.
Should have beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the frustration, I would say, with this with Notre Dame over the years is, you know, their biggest moments, so to speak, are losses, right? The Bush push last year against Ohio State, some of their biggest moments. I'm going to say
right.
All of
wow,
them.
Wow, that's
right?
Crazy. You're right.
Yeah. So, I mean, their iconic moments in the past handful of years are losses. You know, they put it on, you know, Caleb Williams last year. It was a great performance.
A thing of beauty.
Yep. Yeah. Awesome game. So it's going to be, like I said, there's a lot of pressure. I think Greg McElroy said it on his podcast. He said, you know, there's a ton of pressure on Marcus Freeman heading into this year. Not like fired or not fired type of pressure, but realistic expectations of the roster set up the way that it is, the schedule set up the way that it is. Once again, I don't think they're good enough to win a national championship, but if we're talking the weekend before Christmas and Notre Dame's not playing, then something went really, really wrong. This team is good enough with that schedule to be in the college football playoff. And, you know, the expanded playoff, I know some people don't like it. I love it. I think it's going to be phenomenal. I think, you know, when you think about the two NFL games, guys, that are sprinkled in on that Saturday, what is it?
Right.
Ravens and I think Ravens Steelers is that Saturday, and Chiefs Texans. In addition to three playoff games on that Saturday, it's becoming an all-time, to be honest, for our town, it's an all-time Vegas weekend, right?
Of course.
Come out here. Weekend before Christmas, all the kids are on, you know, break at their respective schools. Like, I mean, you know, every sports book and in the country should be going to all these colleges and just say, hey, come to Vegas, watch right. all the games here, hang out after your finals are over and have a good old time.
Yep. Just get us a CJ Carr, by the way. CJ Carr waiting in the wings at Notre Dame. And I think the recruiting is going to line up with
Lloyd Carr. Isn't that crazy? The grandson of Lloyd Carr, legendary Michigan coach, is at Notre Dame waiting in the wings. And, you know, once again, not to get too nerdy, but Marcus Freeman, the head coach of Notre Dame, has been very aggressive. And, you know, sometimes it bites you in the butt when you're going for these big-time recruits. But he's got C.J. Carr, who is a borderline five-star quarterback. And then he's got another young man in Deuce Knight.
Deuce!
Who looks electrifying mm-hmm. from, you know, the skill set. And he's verbally committed. He's from Mississippi. Ole Miss is coming hard yeah. after him. So we'll see if they can hold on to him. But, look, if you want to play with the big boys, and this goes for all the teams around the country, you know, you got to recruit at an elite level. You got to do it in the high school ranks. You got to, you know, Clemson, you got to go in the portal. You got to fill some holes, right? Well, and that's what the best teams do. Like, Ohio State's roster is ridiculous. And what they did was they only brought in about 8 or 9 guys in the portal, but they were very specific. They got Quinshon Judkins out of Ole Miss. They got Caleb Downs out of Alabama, elite prospects. So they have picked their spots. You don't have to live in the portal like Colorado, but you should plug your holes that do not work out from a high school rankings, you say, or high school recruiting standpoint, and say, all right, our wide receiver room is a little lacking this year. Let's go to the portal and grab a couple pieces. You can always enhance, and I think that's what Georgia and Ohio State have done really, really well, which is we're still going to attack recruiting from a high school standpoint, but we can fill these holes with you know, with really good players. I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head, but I think there was a tight end at Stanford, Yersmek or something like that.
Right.
He was really good, and he went in the portal. He's at Georgia, so it's like Georgia picks its spots too. So going completely barren in the portal like Clemson, I think ultimately, and we saw it last year, will come back to bite them. I mean, they lost 4 conference games last year. I mean, that's unheard of for Clemson.
It's like not using free agency in the NFL. Yes, your bread and butter is going to be on draft and development, but you need free agency to plug holes on a yearly basis. So to just completely reject that out of principle or just misguided, I don't know what Debo's doing there or Sweeney or, you know, Clemson's Dabo. Doing, right, Dabo. You know, you got to use it. That's everyone else's, and so you're just cutting you're playing with one arm tied behind your back. And
right. There's a difference between philosophically being against the portal.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, it's here, and you have to utilize it. And they don't. And I don't think Clemson is going to stink by any stretch of the imagination. They still recruit at a very, very high level from the high school rankings, but. You know, you got to replenish, and, you know, you're seeing these elite teams, you know, go into the portal and do that. And once again, you don't have to be Colorado and completely flip your roster. I don't think that is a healthy way to go about it, especially you could do it in college basketball, but I don't think you could really do it in sustained success in college football. But you have to go into the portal and attack it and get some pieces that are going to help you, you know, this year. Like I said, you look at you know, Ohio State, I'm not a huge Will Howard guy. That said, they felt like they needed an upgrade at quarterback, and ultimately they went out and got, you know, Will Howard. Ole Miss is a team that's been attacking the portal like gangbusters with a ton of money. We, you know, one thing that was mentioned, which is pretty interesting, we talked about Quinshon Judkins, who is a really talented running back out of Ole Miss. He left in the portal and went to Ohio State, and their mindset was, you know what, from an NIL standpoint, we feel like we could get 3 running backs, maybe for the price of Judkins, in Grant. They went out and got Logan Diggs from LSU, and they also got Rashad Amos, who was an all-MAC player at Miami of Ohio, and then they went and got Walter Nolan, who is probably one of the best guys in the portal, a defensive lineman from Texas A&M. So that's another fascinating element and dynamic of how this plays out. Now, you mentioned free agency, Vinny, right? Where that's basically what this is.
It is.
And, you know, what your NIL collective has made is you've got to budget it. And sometimes you have to make hard decisions, and that's, you know, ultimately where we're headed. And that's why also you're seeing kind of unique things like a player, we talked about Jaden Maiva, who was UNLV starting quarterback. He's now at USC, projected to be the backup, mm-hmm. but he probably got a pretty good NIL package.
Yes.
Maybe he's set up to be the starter next year. You look at Dante Moore, who was a once upon a time five-star mm-hmm. recruit out of the Detroit area. He goes to UCLA. Things don't go great his freshman year, and he's at Oregon.
Yep.
He's probably getting a really good package there. He's not going to start. He's going to be behind Dylan Gabriel, but he's going to be in that system for a year or two. So you're seeing some of these schools. I mean, I mentioned Ohio State. They went out and got Julian Sayin, who is a former five-star quarterback. He spent, I think, one semester at Alabama. Nick Saban leaves, and they said, hey, why don't you come here, compete, and you'll probably be the backup, but ultimately you might be the starting quarterback at Ohio State. So that's kind of another fascinating thing that you're seeing about the portal is some of these quarterbacks are going to situations where NIL's good, maybe there's some stability, and they're willing to be a backup for a year before taking over as the starter.
And here's $450,000
yes.
for your
yeah.
troubles.
I mean, it's wild, man. I mean, the numbers that are out there obviously are incredible, and you're starting to see, you know, I think Boise State's coach, I thought he said it incorrectly, but I understood what he was saying, which was they're trying to use their NIL money for retention as opposed to giving mm-hmm. players who are freshmen walking in the door. And I understood that mindset. He probably shouldn't have said it out loud.
Right.
But what Boise State has done is they were able to keep a really talented running back in Ashton Gentry, who I'm sure plenty of teams and schools came after him. But, you know, for a school like Boise State, who I'm sure from an NIL standpoint in the group of five is probably one of the most healthy out there. But it's the roster retention now is wild. And look, I don't blame the young men to go out, get their money, man. I mean,
can you imagine, sure. Can you imagine the line outside his office once he said that?
Yeah, right. Yeah, like, by the way, I got all A's last year, and I've been a three-year starter.
Ohio State just called me, Coach. What are we going to do about this?
Yeah. Tim, awesome stuff, man. Thank you so much for coming on. We absolutely love what you do with VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. We urge everybody to go and check that out because the kind of information and the passion you present it with is like none other that's out there, and we really love having you on, Tim. Thanks again for making time for us today.
You bet, guys. Talk to you anytime.
All right. Thank you. Tim Murray, host of Primetime 6 to 9 on VSiN with JVT John Von Tobel. Make sure you get and subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We'll talk more about what he said about the quarterbacks on the other side. And 702-365-9200. Make sure you send the word tickets in for your chance to qualify for our summer of fun.
Yeah, I might be enjoying some Dos Catas tequila watching some college football this year because it's going to be fun. And just trying to keep track of where everybody is going and where everybody is at. But it makes it fun. I know that, you know, it might not be what you wanted traditionally, but traditions change. That's just the way it works. You either keep up or you fall behind. Speaking of Dos Catas Tequila, just want to mention a great location where Dos Catas Tequila is featured, and that's La Casa Cigar Lounge here in Las Vegas over at Tivoli Village. A great, chill, chic place, music every night, different acts every night in terms of the vibe and the music and the genre. But you could always pair up some of the specialty cigars that Mike Prieto, the owner and huge Raider fan, pairs up with all the labels of Dos Catas Tequila. So you're getting kind of a great little partnership between the great labels of Dos Catas Tequila paired up with specialty cigars that Mike has set aside specifically for the Dos Catas Tequila labels. And if you want to just go to a store here locally and buy the hottest tequila brand in Las Vegas, just go check out Total Wines or Lee's Liquor. And if you're not in Las Vegas, no worries. You can go to DosCatasSpirits.com and shop for all your favorite Dos Catas products and have it shipped directly to you. All the details are at DosCatasSpirits.com.
It might be the off-season, but it's always a good time to tailgate with Clay and Vinny.
Thanks for being with us here on Raider Nation Radio. 702-365-9200 is the number. You can reach us on the phones and text line here on the morning tailgate. Vinny and Clay here on your Monday. Just to wrap up some of the things that Tim Murray had talked about. Great to have Tim on from VSiN, host of Primetime and the College Football Betting Podcast. The thoughts of like what quarterbacks could be projected towards the first round of the NFL draft and who really has, you know, the kind of makeup right now. He definitely immediately Shedeur Sanders out of Colorado, NFL legit arm, NFL legit mindset as a quarterback. And then he said maybe Carson Beck, and then he listed a couple other names down there that could eventually make it the first round. But it does sound like, unlike last year, that there is a real discrepancy on NFL quality quarterbacks that could be available in the first round this time around for the NFL draft.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm feeling him with Shakur Sanders. I think that, especially with some better talent around him, i.e. the offensive lineman, or the offensive line, Deion just couldn't get to the offensive line in 1 year, being able to upgrade at that position. You got to understand, Colorado's recruiting was just dog you know what. In the years leading up to Deion taking over there, so there was just all this widespread, all these widespread holes all over the roster, and one of them that he couldn't get to in the years in the short time that he had from arriving to when they kicked off the season was the offensive line. Well, they've definitely invested in the NIL in terms of revamping the offensive line. They brought in some big time recruits along the offensive line. If that area of the team can get better, then his son's going to have a lot more time to throw the ball. What I liked about him is that even while he was playing on the run, which was pretty much every time he dropped back, it felt like, he still was able to make plays. And in the times that he did get time to throw, he is really good at sitting in the pocket and making plays, which is what you're going to make a living on in the NFL. Yes, he's shown that he can run. Yes, obviously. Because of out of necessity, he showed that he could make plays, while scrambling in the pocket. A lot of big plays came from that setting. But in the NFL, first and foremost, you got to be able to make plays from the pocket, and that's what he does best. So theoretically, once he gets to the NFL and is behind an NFL offensive line, there's some that are better than others. We all understand that. But give him protection, he's going to be able to sit back there and make some plays because that's what he does best. I do like Carson Beck, and I like, he's somebody that to me, not that he's going to be like a Jaden Daniels, but I think he has an opportunity in this season for him to really blossom. And if he does, he's got all the tools. He's got the size. He's got the arm strength. He's played in big games already. I would expect Georgia's going to be tremendous. I know they lost Brock Bowers. No question, that's a loss, but they just keep churning them out in Georgia. So however they make up for that loss of Brock Bowers, they will. It might not be in the exact connotation that Brock was. Maybe you go more with the wide receivers, but they'll figure that out. And I think that he has a chance when it's all said and done to be one of the maybe the top pick or the second pick along with the Sanders. To me, I really like Shakur and the future that he has, especially if he can show what he can really do behind a decent offensive line this year.
Okay, we'll come back with some thoughts and phone calls, 702-365-9200. We'll get your thoughts here on Raider Nation Radio. Let's go.
Traffic is brought to you by Meineke, your one-stop shop for total car care. Trust your keys with Meineke, doing car care right.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Clay and Vinny.
Ryan Wallace, Ryan, the hockey guy from Fox Sports Las Vegas. He's the pre- and post-game host on VGK, as well as the original VGK Insider. He joins us at 9 o'clock here on Raider Nation Radio. We'll talk to him about Game 7 of the Stanley Cup, which comes up tonight here on Raider Nation Radio. But out to the phones, 702-365-9200. Let's get out to San Jose with Robert. Good morning to you, sir.
Thanks for taking my call, Clay, Vinny, and good morning.
Good morning.
In terms of your college football talk, I've been a USC fan since OJ was there.
Right.
I haven't been too impressed with Lincoln Riley outside of him bringing Caleb Williams with him. Vinny, do you think there's a possibility of maybe Deion, if Lincoln doesn't get his act together the next season or two, maybe Deion becoming USC's coach? Because I know he can recruit.
Yeah, no, I think you stick with Lincoln Riley. It was a mess. I mean, you are USC. If you're a USC fan, you understand what kind of a mess myopic, terrible leadership from the head of the school right on down. You have a bunch of blue hairs that are trying to run the show. There's a power struggle. It's terrible what happened at USC, and it all contributed to where they are right now. And you can't just keep chasing it by firing the next guy and bringing in another guy and just stick with this and stick with the plan, put a plan together and stay with it. And all the old regime, the money people who think that they could call the shots, get out of the way. just get out of the way and let this thing unfold organically and naturally. And I think if you give Lincoln Riley the time to do it, he'll get it done. But it's just the sense of entitlement that USC has that they can just, you know, change and make these changes and expect nothing to come of it. Some of the coaching decisions Clay Helton should have never gotten. He should have never gotten the job, number one. Number two, they held on to him too long. They just feel like because they're USC, and I know this situation well, everything is going to come up roses. No, you paid this guy money. He's a proven winner. Let him get the work that needs to get done. And some of these people just need to get the hell out of the way.
I hear you. I hope that's...
And you know that. As a USC fan, if you're a true USC fan, you know what exactly I'm talking about.
I do. It's just I'm not used to seeing kids from California heading out to Alabama and Georgia. And when USC was USC, they had a picket fence, particularly around Southern California, and they got their pick. And now it seems like every good kid that's in Southern California is headed to the SEC, and it's just irritating as hell to see somebody wanting to go play in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, instead of in L.A.
When you say when USC was USC, I covered high school sports in Los Angeles back in the 90s. There were guys leaving California, a lot of great players. Justin Fargas went to Michigan rather than USC. He ended up bouncing back to USC. But I can remember plenty of kids, Casey Clawson, Jimmy Kloss, well, Jimmy was when USC was playing really well. But there have been a lot of periods in times, or some prominent periods in time, when USC wasn't building that fence and guys were leaving for the ACC and the SEC and, you know, the Big Ten. So that is something that they have to get in order, is building that fence or rebuilding that fence around California.
And how did you become a Notre Dame fan growing up in L.A.? It's like being a Celtic fan.
Yeah, well, I was born in New York, and my father, it was basically because of my dad. My dad was, born and raised in New York, and there really wasn't a great college football program in his area. You know, he grew up in the Bronx near New York City. So Notre Dame was sort of, for that region, especially if you're a Catholic, Notre Dame was the school. They would come out to play at Yankee Stadium every single year. They were the Subway, college. And so he built an affiliation for Notre Dame, and it just naturally flowed to me. So that's, yeah. And I covered USC. I know Pete, I got to know USC really well as far as being a reporter. I always respected them. I think the world of Pete Carroll, but they've been chasing that ghost now for a little while. And they've made some poor decisions, quite frankly, and they've made poor decisions on who they had as athletic director. That's what I'm talking about. Some of the entitlement of Lynn Swann, that was a terrible hire. It was a terrible hire the day they made that hire. Pat Hayden, I love Pat Hayden, but he didn't have any practical experience. Neither did Lynn Swann, being an athletic director of a big time college program. You have to spend the money, and you have to bring in people that have been experienced building a college program and a college football program, and their sense of entitlement is, well, we could just go reach back into the past and bring in Lynn Swann with no real experience, or Pat Hayden with no real experience. To me, those types of hires set USC back.
Yeah, looks like it's going to be another long season for Trojan fans.
We'll see.
Robert.
They always have a way of reemerging.
All right, you guys have a good day.
You too, brother.
Thanks, Robert in San Jose. Yeah, that's the thing about relinquishing control. There are some institutions that don't like what they perceive as outsiders coming in to help change things, even if it is for the better, because change is somewhat the last thing they want.
You have to accept it. It's just the way of the world. Things aren't done the way they were in the 50s. From the 50s to the 70s, there was a big change. In the 70s to the 90s, there was a big... So you just have to keep rolling with it and figuring it out. That's why I respect what Notre Dame is doing. You know, they've built up their NIL. That's not a world that they expected to ever be in. Yet here we are, and they're embracing it rather than rejecting it out of some principle or some some way of doing things. Well, that's not the way we do things here at Notre Dame. Well, who cares how you do things at Notre Dame? Is that the way you're going to be able to put yourself in the best possible position to succeed? Mm-hmm. Or are you holding yourself back by holding on to some way that doesn't exist anymore? And so the ones that are ahead of the curve and that understand it and that embrace the change and that mastered the change are going to be the ones that continue to succeed. That's just the way life works. We all want it to be the way it used to be, but it never – there's a reason why it's called used to be. U-S-E-D, used. That's past tense. Used to be isn't the way it is now.
It's Raider Nation Radio here on R&R 920 AM. Vinny and Clay will step aside. We come back in 2 minutes with Ryan Wallace, Golden Knights Insiders. We'll talk Game 7 of the Stanley Cup tonight here on Raider Nation Radio.